Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Paul McLaughlin of Ballygar Garden Centre is with me. Hi, Paul. How are you
Greg,
getting on?
How are you?
Just to remind listeners, by the way, if you have any questions as it relates to looking after your bedding plants, your indoor stuff, maybe you want a bit of life on the balcony of your flat or apartment, not everyone's lucky enough to have in a garden. And then some people have a garden and they don't feel they're very lucky to have it at all because it can take a little bit of work. But anything that's green, flowers or grows, whether it's in your garden, on your windowsill or wherever, get in touch with us. We'll get Paul to answer your questions on 0866 25,000 or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. We were absolutely spoiled, weren't we, with the great spell of weather, but it's still mild and there's no harm in a bit of rainfall, Paul, is there? You know,
absolutely not. No, I think things were, well, we were spoiled with a bit of good weather, I suppose, like everything around here, we can't handle too much of anything. So whenever the dry weather had come along there, plants were sort of starting to show the effects of that, almost, that it was almost too dry. So the wee bit of wet weather was welcome whenever it did come.
And is there any symptoms of sort of plant life not enjoying the hot weather as much?
Yes, generally trees have a sort of a defence mechanism that they'll shed a certain percentage of the leaves that they have on them, because the leaves, they lose water through the leaves. So in order to protect themselves and protect the main structure of the tree, they shed some leaves as they go along. So that was almost starting to happen there recently. So it was now the trees were shedding a wee bit of leaves, just probably they thought it was going to be a prolonged spell.
But yeah. All right, okay. Potato blight. I noticed Matarin has issued an advisory in relation to this. It's not everywhere, but we seem to be under the potato blight warning in some of the maps that I've seen. What is it about the weather that creates these conditions that could harm the crop?
Yeah, I suppose a potato blight's a fungus. Mm. And as a fungus, it sort of thrives in that sort of warm, damp conditions. So, like, today's a bit breezy for it almost, and he's calmer for potato blight to thrive and spread.
So that's what maybe insulates us a little bit, not that we're immune.
No, the minute, it seems to be further down the country, seems to be very much under blight.
So calm, warm, wet, muggy conditions.
That muggy conditions is perfect for potato blight, just to both thrive and to spread.
And does it attack the actual potatoes in the ground or the greenery above the ground or what?
It starts in the top, so the potato just like starts in the top of the plant, then works its way down. Mm. So generally, if you have a wee touch, you can actually remove the affected leaves off the plant. It may prevent it going on down, but it does travel through the whole system. Wow. And eventually goes down into the potato itself.
And if you have prior warning, you know what's going on, and lots of people would know this already, right? I think people are pretty established in relation to that. But in case people are doing this at home, if you are in a blight warning, what is the treatment?
General treatment, you do get fungicide sprays. That, I know not everybody in foodstuffs wants to use sprays, but it's probably the most effective treatment is to get fungicide sprays that you put on. And they generally, there are a number in the market, and they sort of prevent it and can treat it slightly. And if you're organically growing them, there is a traditional old one, used to be called Bluestone. I'm sure older farmers would have used it.
I've heard that myself.
Bluestone is certified organic. It goes under the name of Bordeaux mixture, copper mixture. It doesn't actually affect the... it doesn't prevent the blight, but what it does, it really builds up the defence system of the potato itself. So the potato itself is much better able to fend off the blight.
Yeah, and is that not an old wives' tale? That's tried and tested.
Yeah, no, that's tried and tested for years, maybe the 50s, 60s. So it was pretty much the only thing that was available around here.
I was driving through a town recently, let me put it like that, there, and it was being sprayed up and down the street.
Yes.
And those spraying it were well protected. They had all the gear on and all. Yeah. I wonder, I shouldn't speculate, but I wonder, are we still using the Roundup and what have you for public control of weeds and what have you? Because these were areas where, you know, you could be very easily walking with a boogie or a dog or another pet for that matter and, you know, come into contact with some of this greenery, such as the nature of it overlapping on the footpath. And we might make an inquiry, actually. I should have asked that beforehand, but I hope we're not still using those really toxic chemicals.
Yes, Roundup is still quite popular. There was chat a few years ago with banning it, but it's...
Well, this
it's,
was... this seemed to be official. This didn't seem to be like someone out on the street. You know,
yes,
seemed to be
the... No, funny, you'd see evidence, even driving around, you see a lot of times you see evidence of what would be classed as burning, if you know what I mean, chemical burning of weeds. Yeah, it would still be fairly widespread.
And it's bloody toxic stuff, isn't it?
It is all right, Diane. A lot of people would very much, it affects the bee population, stuff like that. That is the main cause
might,
of reduction.
Might, we might make an inquiry in relation to that, actually. We talked about spuds, but tomatoes, very popular, yes. Perhaps even more so, not in terms of scale, but in terms of participation. What stage are tomato plants at the moment now?
Tomato plants now, they should be, probably most people get them around the start of May. So if you grow them from seed, you'd plant them out into your polytunnel, your greenhouse, with the start of May. And some people do it in the conservatory there. But the generally, you'd be starting to see the first flowers coming on them now. So you would, and flowers obviously turn into the tomatoes as the year goes on. So,
I have great memories of checking the tomato plants with my mum, you know, the wee green tomatoes. Can we pick them yet? No, no, we have to wait for them. And then in the bottom drawer of the kitchen, there was like a polystyrene thing she'd grow mushrooms in.
Other
times she'd get us up like at 5 o'clock in the morning to go picking mushrooms and stuff. Great stuff. Mussels from the shore. And
funny,
great times.
The polystyrene mushroom kits were very popular, and I think since, I don't know if anybody was watching Clarkson's Farm.
Right.
They did a whole thing on mushrooms.
Okay.
And it seems to have sort of reinvigorated the idea of people doing mushrooms.
Yeah.
So it has now. But it's quite an easy, especially if you're someone, like say the polystyrene thing in the drawer, it doesn't take much space.
Well, it's easy to grow them too, because you just treat them like politicians treat us.
Yes. Yes, I know where you're going there, all right.
Keep them in the dark and feed them. Poop. Yeah. Right, so the tomatoes coming on now, feed them regularly.
Yes, pretty much every 2 weeks.
Any sort of
now.
Enemies of the tomato plant we should keep an eye out for?
Yes, I suppose the green fly is the main one, and probably vigilance is your key there in terms of keep an eye on your tomato plants, and a small infestation of green flies easy to deal with. If they're clattered in them, it can be hard to deal with, if you know what I mean. So keep an eye on them and just treat them as they occur.
There's a hosepipe ban in Milford. Buncrana, Carrigart, Downings, Letterkenny, I think Ballybofey, Snorl are also, you know, supplies are light. There's not enough rain at the moment either to address that. So, you know, we can wait till we're sort of told to try and restrict our water usage, or we can sort of be proactive and understand that we have a role to play in this as well. Any tips on saving water or being more economical with them?
Yes, probably going forward, the way things are going, water conservation is going to become a bigger issue. But basically, there are a few small tips you can do to actually just sort of get yourself into better habits, shall we say. The main key would be this, for the benefit of plants as well, would be water morning or evening. If you water sort of in the middle part of the day, the water tends to evaporate and it can actually scorch plants. So water morning and evening. Get into the habit of using a watering can rather than the hose, because hose, by the time you walk to the plant, you've splashed it everywhere. Mm-hmm. Whereas watering can, if you have to actually carry it over and back, you're generally, because of the work involved, you tend to be more targeted with it.
Water butts, so say for instance, you know, say you have a shed, right, and you don't have to do it, but say you half the downpipe and stick the barrel in underneath it, like, does that water not go off?
No, generally it wouldn't, actually.
Because it's fresh water, right?
Because it's fresh water. And most,
I mean, not for drinking, but, you know, for plants, it's not going to get stagnant and stink.
A lot of people would actually say that it's actually more beneficial than tap water, if you know, because there are less chemicals and stuff.
Yeah, of course there is.
But, generally most water butts for safety come with a lid. And that anyway. So now once it's in there, it's grand. And there's sort of a certain amount of flow going through it as it empties, just refilling. So it's all constantly moving.
Yeah, and you see sometimes, knocking about, a lot of farmers have them, but these sort of square or cube water tanks in cages, what's going on there? Are they useful? What would you use them for?
Generally, a lot of people, if you have plenty of water, if you have a large shed roof, it's actually them water, them tanks you're sort of recycling as you go. They're easily available. Generally, look Dundee or something like that, there you always pick them up, but they would hold 1,000 litres, which means you're holding a good bit of water. And they've actually got taps and all on the bottom, so if you set it up on a couple of pallets,
it's more accessible.
Exactly.
The barrel's grand, but you're always taking scoops from the top of it, aren't you? Unless you elevate it.
Well, most barrels be about 100 litres for these things.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, and people can argue left, right and into the centre, so the reason why maybe we're just building too many houses or connecting too many houses, we are going to see more strain on the water supply, especially considering that over 40% of our water that is treated in Donegal is lost through leaks.
Yes.
Which is quite frustrating. I was talking to Michaela a little bit about bedding plants. They're all up and running. I was with you. Did I get bedding plants from you? Is that what they are?
Yes, you did.
Okay, they're coming on.
Yeah, very good.
Did a bit of deadheading as well.
Right, very good. Excellent. That keeps them producing better and like generally better. better for the health.
No, I did it off the back of what you said, so it doesn't feel right, but then it makes sense. Mm-hmm. They're starting to deadhead, coming on. They take really well once they're transferred into the pots. People grow them in different ways, but people can get them in there now and enjoy them now, and that beautiful colour and the aroma as well, actually.
Exactly. It's lovely. There's some great scents of some of them, actually.
Okay. So keep an eye on them. Deadhead where necessary, water where necessary.
Just keep an eye on the water too, because like people look out today, but maybe the position of them, maybe they're not getting the benefit of the rain. So just keep an eye. And one, like if you do nothing else with them, if you just keep them watered.
All right, okay. We're going to get to some of your questions and a couple more topics to talk about after we take this quick break. Stay right where you are. In the company of Paul McLaughlin from Ballacdur Garden Centre. A quick word, bloom. It happens once a year. Hundreds of thousands of people go to it. It feels snooty. It feels like, oh, hello. Mm-hmm. I've just read some poetry and I'm going to look at plants. Is that my insecurity or is it a little bit like that?
No, probably would be aspect of it a wee bit like that, maybe, if you know what I mean.
I just think Pat Kenny will be there.
I've been there a lot of years and I've yet to see Pat Kenny.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
But no, bloom is actually, if you're into gardening, sort of, for gardeners, it's like their ploughing championship, right. You know what I mean?
So are you getting down?
No, not this year. I've been, probably in the last 10 years, I'd say I've been 7 or 8 times.
You're dipping and out.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. It's food as well. It's food and nature, really, isn't it?
Yes, pretty much. No, if you're into gardening, it is definitely worth a visit. It's actually, it's in the middle of Phoenix Park, just literally beside Darris Nuchter on there, so it's very, quite easily accessible.
Decent parking.
Decent parking, but local here, I don't know if they're doing it this year, but a few years there was a local bus company actually ran trips up and down the one day.
Which would make a lot of sense, yeah.
So it was actually a handy way of doing it, you know.
Brilliant stuff. 100,000 people expected in between now and Monday.
Yes.
It's huge.
But definitely if you're in the area, it is worth a look.
Okay, are foxgloves poisonous?
Yes, very much so.
How do you mean? To us, like if we ate them.
Yeah, if you were.
And would you get the skitter, or would they be worse for you?
No, apparently it's actually the attack your heart.
Wow.
I think that's like your Agatha Christie. That's how they used to.
Now that you say it.
It would be so.
Yeah. So, do you eliminate them or just not go near them?
No, generally just let them go. You mind your business, and they'll mind theirs.
Can you replant the end of a scallion stalk? And if you did, of course you can replant it. But will it grow back?
Yes, it will. They'll be quite slow to grow back, if you know what I mean. They're sort of, a lot of these things you see at the minute there, they'll be like TikTok hacks. Most people doing that. But yes, if you do plant another wee bit, you cut off. Probably if you're going to do it, cut it off a wee bit longer than you would normally.
Okay.
But now, generally within 3-4 weeks.
And do you plant that in its entirety underground? Do you put the bulb, the end down first, or the stalk down first?
Generally put the bit, sort of the wee stringy bits coming out almost, like put them either into soil or even into a glass of water.
Okay.
Just halfway up.
Yeah.
And it'll resprout. So some people do it just in a glass of water in the windowsill.
Oh, really?
Change the water about every week or so.
There you go.
And they'll grow away, or they're quicker if you put them into soil.
Yeah, okay. I read recently, or perhaps saw a TikTok, that if you put sugar on your lawn, it stops weeds. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, there is, to an extent. Whether it'd be worthwhile doing or
practical,
that, another question, if you know what I mean. No, but sugar does actually, sugar makes, first of all, it breaks down the thatch a wee bit. Like the old dead grass in the bottom of it, but what it also does, sugar, whenever it dissolves into things, it makes the nutrients more available, almost, so the plants can take up more nutrients as they go. But I've heard of this before, but it's not so much a matter of repairing a bad lawn using sugar. It'll be like taking your very good lawn
to
a great lawn,
right, okay,
if you know what I mean. Like, it'll be sort of the final step.
It's like bathing in milk.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, right. Pretty much.
Don't have to do it, but it might make your skin nice and soft. All right, I get you. But I'm just thinking in a practical sense, you know.
No,
I'm thinking of getting an indoor plant, Paul, that has low maintenance. Any recommendations?
Yes, probably, obviously, my go-to always in this sort of sense for having about the house is aloe vera, because it just absolutely thrives in neglect.
Mm-hmm.
But they're probably...
It flowers and all, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't flower.
Does it not?
It's almost like
I know, I can see the thick sort of leaves from it, but it's
like a cactus sort of thing. It's a succulent, so it holds a lot of water inside.
Yeah.
So they're grand, very useful for burns.
Oh, fantastic.
There, but probably not the most attractive thing. If you're looking for an attractive indoor plant, you'd be chatting. There are a few popular ones. A ficus is sort of a big green one. Would eventually, if you let it, gets quite into a big sort of substantial plant. But nice for greenery, good for purifying air. There's another one called a mother-in-law's tongue, which is, it's almost like an aloe vera. Mm. Very good for air purifying as well. Or if you're looking for something to flower, the orchid's hard to beat. Mm. Once again, all them plants sort of thrive a wee bit.
Never see those things that look like palm trees. Mm-hmm. What are they? You see them sitting in the corner of sunrooms and all, and no one ever waters them, and they don't die.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do they grow? Are they real?
Yes, I know, for the most part they would be, even though actually sort of a lot of indoor plants now you get very convincing fakes.
Mm.
You know? But the sort of palm tree looking ones, a lot of them be bromeliads, which would be, they'd be members of the pineapple family.
Mm.
So they would be.
And they require, they just take the moisture from the air, do they?
Pretty much. So a lot of them have sort of arid, other ones just a wee bit of water, say, every month.
Yeah.
Do them grand, because they come from very tropical climates.
Yeah, remarkable. Very grand plants, but they look almost unreal. Yeah,
yeah. But a lot of things people in house plants, a lot of the reason they feel is actually too much water and too much care.
But you do see similar plants to the ones I've just mentioned outdoors as well, and they seem to thrive as well and go great size. So they must be able to adapt their water consumption.
Yes.
I didn't cut back my roses this year and have a far better bloom. Is that a coincidence, or was I cutting them too far back?
To be honest, the sounds of you probably were cutting them too far back.
Yeah.
I would say as much as anything else. But it would be important just after this year, if they haven't been cut back, give them a wee cut back next year. Because like, you'd be sort of building old wood. If you
know. Yeah, I get you. So you struck lucky this year. Just don't trim back as far next year.
Yeah.
Okay. Greg, please ask Paul, what's the best natural mix to kill bugs that are in the soil and eating all my veggies as soon as they appear?
Right.
Is there anything naturally that kills them, or is it actually discouraging them?
Very little natural bug killer as such, if you know what I mean. It depends what sort of bugs you're dealing with. You can sort of introduce other predators, a lot of for greenfly, that sort of thing, but you can actually order online. It would be like ladybird eggs and spread them about, so they naturally kill off a lot of the bugs, be a more natural way of approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I always advocate is the garlic spray, which is just boil a bulb of garlic, like the whole bit. Boil it for about 15 minutes in water, let the water cool, and then spray that on your plants, and it makes them less palatable to the bugs.
Yeah, so you're not killing them, you're just deterring them at that point.
Exactly,
okay.
Yeah.
I have a cherry, so you could maybe go on a natural route and maybe try and prevent it organically. Yeah,
the other thing would be introduce a couple of sacrificial plants,
like
some nasturtiums or something like that there, that put them in among your vegetables that are sort of tastier to the bugs.
They take one for the team.
They'll go for them first.
All right. I have a cherry tree, but as soon as they begin to ripe, the birds take them. Then I put mesh over it, but it's too tall now. Is there anything else I could do to protect them until they have time to fully develop?
Effectively, no.
It's a toughie, isn't it? Yeah.
Pretty much, because you can put up stuff like, you see people hanging up CDs or putting in sort of bird scarers. That birds are kind of too smart for that, and they catch on to it fairly quickly. If you know, the bird netting is the most effective way, but I can understand if the trees
it's too tall,
big.
Yeah.
It's good hard to do. But
could you please ask Paul for a cure for a boundary thorn hedge where a section of it's been recently covered with a massive web, similar to cobwebs? I'm afraid it will smother and kill the hedge, which has been there for a lifetime.
Right. Funny, thorn would be very resilient, so I would doubt whether something like that would kill it, if you know what I mean. Maybe sort of take a few photos of this web, if you know what I mean, and sort of bring it to your garden centre to identify what that is, if you know what I mean. But it could be another plant sort of interfering with it, if you know what I mean. But like I say, thorn's very resilient, so I would doubt whether it would actually kill it.
Paul, this is not really the garden, but moss on old tarmac or anywhere on the ground, is there really a 100% solution for it? Like, if I've tried to clean it, I've tried to sort of treat it, mm-hmm. and by the time it's beginning to look like it's dying away, it starts again.
Yes.
You know, and people can dig it out and you can burn it and stuff. People talk about washing powder and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. What is the most effective way to get some relief from moss on old tarmac?
Moss and old tarmac, I suppose, a lot of people do use the washing powder. That there used to be a very effective product for it, but it's gone off the market now.
Mm.
Not because it was toxic or anything, but because the people who made it retired.
Mm.
Took the recipe with them.
Right.
It was stuff called Armilitox.
Okay.
But it was very effective. So basically, a lot of the thing to get rid of the moss sort of permanently, if you can improve the drainage, because moss tends to, and old tarmac sort of tends to gather in places.
The thing with mine is it's more like the, and maybe it's the same with this listener, it's more like the structure of the tarmac's broken down.
Yes.
And, you know, it's catching seeds and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, because mine would be a good fall on mine, and I wonder if this is sort of the same. It just feels like the integrity of the tarmac allows whatever's floating around in the mm-hmm. air to catch and grow, like.
Yeah, but at the minute I don't know if anything is much more effective than the sort of washing powder, that sort of thing. Like, you do get algae killers that you can buy in garden centres and that. So some of them would work quite well, would kill it off. So check in your local garden centre. There are a few brand names that go wonder.
And as you say, maybe it could be a draining issue, maybe it's issue not. And you need a, you need sort of a nuanced response to
the,
it.
The other thing you do is actually an old tire that's going to be sort of destructive in a sense. But whenever it is actually, if you do kill it off, try and remove it even with a light go away pressure washer or something. Because the old moss lying there, even as dead, becomes sort of, like you said, catches more.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Does the law about cutting shrubs in small patches, gardens, etc., is there a law in relation to
that? No, there's a law of cutting back hedges and trees that goes from the 1st of March to the 1st of September. But no, it doesn't cover trimming in gardens.
It doesn't cover trimming in gardens, Mary, and that was specifically the question, so that answers that. Just time for two more. Any advice on how to cut pampas grass?
Pampas grass, traditionally you burned it.
Okay.
If it was safe to do so, what you do is just not petrol or anything like that, but actually just put newspaper within it and light it. Generally, it burns to the ground and then it'll sprout up new again next year or even later on
that
the same year.
That sounds like fun.
Yes, probably.
I would like to do that.
Obviously, if not, if it's planted around the oil tank.
No, of course
but
not.
But otherwise, just sort of...
Anything that involves me lighting a fire and it's productive, I'm in it.
Right, okay. Otherwise, just get a saw and like saw it off at the ground. But it can be very sharp in itself, so
be careful there.
A long sleeve jumper.
If people have patches of the lawn damaged by dogs peeing, how can you sort of, or what's the best way to individually treat those problem areas?
Generally, just give them a good rake over and reseed it.
Yeah.
Where it's been killed off by the dog pee. Dog's pee, I think, kind of neutralises sort of within a few weeks, so if you do repair it with a bit of grass, it will come back. Like it's not, there's no residual effect.
Yeah, right. Okay, so rake it, seed it.
Rake it, seed it, exactly. Paul, maybe mix a wee bit of sand in it just to keep the moisture in the seed.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Right. Thanks as always. Really appreciate it. That's Paul McLaughlin there from Ballagdurg Garden Centre. And we'll be back with more from you in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, perfect.
And we'll be back with more today on the show after this break. Now, India Kennedy is Campaigns and Events Director with O'Grafina Fall and joins us on the show now. India, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Greg, and hello to all your listeners.
I've been talking on this programme about period poverty for a very, very long time. And I think there's a certain section of the population, and no harm to them, don't actually believe that people could be so financially tight that they're picking up baby food over sanitary products, but or even maybe young girls coming of age and, you know, their parents are stretched and they don't have other access to this type of stuff. But it's a real thing. It's not just a catchphrase. Period poverty does exist in this country.
Yeah, and it's a very real issue, especially for women right across the board, from young women to women that are living just on the breadline and might be in a shop and see a family pack of chicken fillets or a box of tampons, and they have to make the decision to make, you know, put their family first. And it's a basic human right. Women get their periods every month, and it's not something that we choose to get. It's something that we have to go through, and we shouldn't be forced into poverty for something that is an essential item for us.
And we've seen some brilliant initiatives here in Donegal, local schools, you know, transition year products, projects where they've worked on this and they've, you know, they've got period products in toilets and things like that. That's great where, you know, it applies and where it's maintained. But there's a national strategy that's required here. So what do you think could be introduced that could end period poverty?
So at the moment, OGRA are calling for period products to be available in all public buildings. This was something that was piloted by Clare County Council, and it is widely used across Europe. I've just come back from Brussels on a delegation trip, and we were in the European Parliament and the Council of the Regions, and every building in Brussels, whether it was a small restaurant or the European Parliament, period products were available in all the toilets.
And how does that present? Are they in like a machine? Are they left sitting on the side? If there's anything uncomfortable to speak about, don't say it. But I'm just curious. I'm just curious as how they're presented, you know, because it would have to be maintained, right? You can't just have them there. They run out. So, like, are they in vending machines or are they sitting on a counter or how do you access them?
Well, for example, in the European Parliament building, they're similar to the vending machines that are available in toilets across. But instead of you put your money in and you pull it out, It just restocks itself.
Brilliant.
You can take as much or as little as you want. And I think it's good to have things like that because it's something that you shouldn't be embarrassed to say, oh gosh, forgot. I need, you know, I need something myself. And in restaurants, every restaurant that we went to and every cafe we went to, there was just a small little box in the corner that had pads and tampons.
And it just normalizes, isn't it? Doesn't it, India? It just means it takes it out of, it takes
the stigma out.
And it also removes a problem. It's because also too, it can be, it's not just if you can't afford them, but it's also having access to them when you need them. You know, exactly. Whether you're in a school, you don't want to have to go around necessarily asking people. But if you're out for something to eat, you do not know that you might at that time need one of these products. So it removes social issues as well, potentially.
Exactly. And I worked, I studied in Belfast, and in my first year, I did a bit of work with the SDLP, and one of their MLAs actually put in a bill, a period poverty bill, to ensure that, similar to what Oba are calling for now, that period products are available in every public building. And that was in April of 2021, May of 2021. And then when I came back to college in second year, our college had period products. The local library in Belfast had period products. So it took the stigma away from it. So it's something that's very affordable. Another thing that we're calling for is the removal of VAT from sustainable period products like period pants and menstruation cups. And this is something that's been called for by our colleague Sorka Connolly, who works with the ALDE party. And it's just, they shouldn't be penalised for wanting to use sustainable products. So it's something that we are calling for in Ogra, and it's something that we want to see right across the board.
I'm also, what about education? Because, you know, like, I feel like what we're talking about is, you know, adults, and that's very important. But I just, I wonder sometimes, you know, like, depending on a background, you know, a girl that's coming of age or what have you, is the conversation be had in school? Is there education there? Is there sort of access outside the home to these types of products in schools and what have you? I can just imagine a scenario where someone's going into school and this comes upon them, and, you know, maybe they're not talked about at home, or maybe they feel they don't have the resources home, and you can imagine you could feel yourself very isolated. Is there enough being done for that cohort, I wonder?
I was very lucky. I have two older sisters, and so it was something that was very openly talked about in my house. But whenever we were in primary school, we were in fifth class, and our teacher actually pulled us aside, just the girls, not the boys, and said, you know, this is going to be a time where you might have your period in fifth class. You know, it might come early.
That's lovely, right?
And we were very aware that if it came, or, you know, if we find ourselves in that situation, we could talk to our teacher about it.
What a great teacher.
There was no embarrassment behind it. You weren't ashamed behind it. And the same was in sixth class. You know, there was products just behind the toilet. And our teacher said, if you need more, if you need less, just come and talk to me about it, or if there's something you're embarrassed by. But there is a certain stigma when you go to secondary school where, you know, they're not as widely available. It was something that we called for in the student council. So there was products available, but they weren't always restocked, and you could find yourself without. But a lot of girls are, you know, in first and second year, they're very embarrassed to talk about it. But by the time you get to sixth year, you know, it's not something that should be embarrassed by. And I think that by calling for things like period products in public buildings, you can see more around you that this is not something to be embarrassed by. This is something that's available for you. Take it when you need it. Don't take it when you don't need it. And I think that just takes the stigma away from it.
And I think too, from the project I was speaking to the students from, it's a West Donegal school, and I don't want to wrongly attribute it, but the boys were involved in the conversation about access to these types of products. So it meant that it wasn't, ooh, she said period. You know what I mean? It kind of just, it just was right. No, this is it. It's not funny. It's reality. Yeah. You're in, because, you know, there can be a vacuum that can be filled with a lack of understanding. I regret that we're still talking about this, because this affects every woman for the most part. Whether you're Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, nothing, right? No party whatsoever. And, you know, it's not massive. We're not talking about a massive cost. We're talking about dragging things up into the mid-20s in which we're at. So hopefully India, Ogra, Fianna Fáil's input onto this as well just gets it over the line, because it feels like this is something we shouldn't still have to be talking about. We should have this fixed.
Absolutely. And it's something that we as women shouldn't be embarrassed by. And I think that by putting period products into public buildings, it'll just bring the stigma away from it, and you'll never have to be without, and you won't have to, you know, you won't have to choose one thing over the other when it's something that happens every month.
Yeah, indeed. India, thanks for your time. Lovely to chat to you again. Bye-bye. That's India Kennedy, Campaign and Events Director with Ogra Fianna Fáil, 086 60 25,000. I just want to remind you that members of McGarrity Síochána across the county are going to be wearing purple ribbons on their uniforms on Friday, that's tomorrow of course, to mark National Day for Domestic Abuse Awareness. It was scheduled to occur a couple of weeks ago but coincided with the funeral of a Garda that was very sadly killed on duty, so was deferred, takes place tomorrow. It's been going since 2020, believe it or not, and it's a collaboration between the local Gardaí and local domestic abuse refuges. And it's about raising awareness, having the conversation again, you know, destigmatizing the situation. Donegal Town Garda Station, they're hosting a coffee morning between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Members of the community policing unit in Letterkenny and Lifford, they're going to be out on the beat on Friday wearing their purple ribbons, distributing info about domestic abuse, support services, etc. And we heard from Grania on Tuesday. Garda Catherine Callahan, she's going to be out planting purple flowers in the flower bed outside Lifford Garda Station on Friday. So go along and get involved in that if you wish. It's a nice wee thing. It's very casual, and Garda Catherine, I'm sure, it would be very welcome for people to come and help out or have a chat or what have you. And just don't forget that if you're a victim of domestic violence or someone you know who is, contact the Gardaí. They're there, 999112. In this county, there's been an awful lot of training. There's specialist Gardaí that work in this area. They can meet you. They can operate in plain clothes. There's lots of different things. There's even an app where if you are in that vulnerable situation, that you can sort of log your experiences and what have you. You can audio record and stuff. So there are tools there. Just don't be on your own. Don't endure. Don't be a hero, because these things escalate. We've often seen that. They do escalate. Hi, Greg. Just regarding the hospital, another thing that's lost in the hospital is that no one would even know about until you would need it. I need to get a tooth pulled, and because of the cancer treatment that I'm on, and if my bloods aren't right, my dentist says I may need to have it done in a hospital. Wait for it. Galway Hospital. Letterkenny Hospital always had this facility but never renewed it after COVID, even though the dentist from Derry has applied to return and has been told it won't be renewed again. Thanks, Greg. Just thought it's another massive loss sending people to Galway to have a tooth pulled. You see, and as this, in fact, I believe this lady contacted me on the socials, you don't know until you need to get a tooth pulled. And if you're on certain cancer treatments, you might have to go to Galway to get a tooth out. I'm waiting on an appointment for my daughter to see a dermatologist. She's been referred to Dr. McKenna in Sligo by Letterkenny, but that was over a year ago. Is there any update on this service returning to Letterkenny? I've heard nothing of it. The problem in Letterkenny is the Polestar traffic lights switch lights off to let traffic flow. Traffic lights at Letterkenny Hospital to St. Connell's are also causing delays. Put pedestrian crossings with flashing amber lights and marks on road will let traffic flow down from mountain top. Well, there's more traffic lights going on, more roundabouts. The traffic lights on Letterkenny's Polestar roundabout were never designed to make things move necessarily quicker. They were designed so that everybody had an access to move. You know, if you're used to a route that always moved okay in the old system, conversely, there are people that never got out of certain roads because the roundabout system just worked against them. Half an hour free parking, Letterkenny. When is this coming to Ballybuffet? There was conversations about that, and I think it came to a vote, and there were some people not too keen on it. So I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I think you should be talking and highlighting all day today of the outrageous scandal of this government backing Israel financially on its murderous slaughter of innocent men, women and children in Gaza. They should all be hanging their heads in shame. No point in them giving token lip service about Israel anymore when you see how they voted yesterday. This was a Pearse Doherty bill, I believe. It was about Israel securing bonds or to do with the bonds market. It was defeated. Two government-supporting TDs voted actually against the government. The argument was the government said it was not compatible with EU law. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I want Ireland to stay neutral, says a caller. Our soldiers shouldn't get involved in Putin or Trump's war. When a lot of American soldiers came back from Vietnam, they were housed in a tent in San Francisco. A lot of them were affected by by it. They ended up on the streets, wrapped in blankets, not able to look after themselves. Indeed, the vets in the United States, there's still, some would say, being neglected to this day. Okay, it's going to continue damp today, though less so in the afternoon. Temperatures 13 to 17 degrees, and a bit of sunlight might break through, because we always need a bit of sunlight in our lives. And, well, I have a ray of it right now in front of me. It's just the most stylish man, apparently, Noel Cunningham from Harvey's Point. Good morning to you, Noel. How are you getting on?
Good morning. Can you hear me, Greg?
Loud and clear, Noel. Congratulations.
Excellent.
On your...
A very good morning to your listeners as well.
Congratulations on your recent award. Looking very dapper.
Well, honestly, I was traumatised because not too many weeks ago we were in Dublin.
Yes.
The Incognigent Ascenti and Those Who Matter. Yes. And there you were, crowned the best dressed, and I had to get counselling. So
I beat Noel Cunningham.
Absolutely.
Phil Coulter.
And deservedly.
Oh,
I'm so
not finished. The list goes on. Mickey Joe Hart, Matt McGranahan. I mean, there were so many stylish men there. And who came out on top? Monsieur Greg Hughes.
And deservedly so. You were a vision in sheer elegance and well-coordinated colour and accessories.
Thank you, my dear. Right, it's rolled around again. The Kevin Bell Repatriation Fund, the Kevin Bell organisation, is unbelievable. The amount of people they've helped, and they are just the most wonderful people themselves. If you lose someone abroad, you're dealing with getting that news and all the hoops that one... How do you get the remains of a loved one home? You shouldn't have to think about that. It's inhumane almost that you should have to think about that in your grief. And in steps an organisation like Kevin Bell, named after their own wonderful son Kevin, who died abroad, unfortunately. And over the years, Noel, the Kevin Bell Repatriation Fund have helped so, so many families, often under the radar, but it really is astonishing the work they do with people at the most difficult of times, Noel.
We truly forget, because we hear about some people in our own area or people connected with our own families, but this is countrywide. And, you know, when you suddenly sit back and think how many of our young people there are now making new lives abroad in Canada, Australia, different parts of the world. And the point you make is such a valid one. It's not just repatriating a remains. It's that tragedy that strikes unannounced, that immediately you have to wonder, what do I do? Who do I go to? Who do I call? What can be done? And they are there for all, not only just financial, but all of those other aspects. And every year I say this, they are, in my estimation, one of the greatest couples ever to turn such a tragedy into such a positive, and to think of the number of people throughout the country that they've helped down the years. It's extraordinary and wonderful. And, you know, it's a bit like the terrible curse of cancer in families. We are now, due to the fact that so many of our youth are away, and indeed not just youth, but older, and that we almost all know someone who was helped by the Kevin Bell Repatriation Fund. So I couldn't talk highly enough of them or support them in any way I can. And thank you, Greg, and thank you, Highland Radio, because any time that I need to kind of garner support for anything that's being done for any cause, but particularly the Kevin Bell, you come and you help, and I am so grateful.
No, I've met the couple myself, and they are so normal, actually. They're just perfectly normal. If you saw them walk, I mean, why wouldn't they be normal? Don't get me wrong. But they're just two normal people that have created something in their son's name that is so, so remarkable. It's almost like another branch of the emergency services. They really are something else. And Noel is involved in a walk. It's a moderate difficulty walk on Sunday at Sleeve League. Now, there's two ways of approaching the weather for walking. Like, it's lovely in the sun, right? But it can be quite arduous and all that kind of stuff. But we are now just in the throes of the world throwing up its beauty and greenery and everything. And that smell brings out all this, you know, a bit of rain and misty smell brings out all, sorry, brings out all the smells of wonderful Mother Nature. And what a lovely walk it will be, even if there is a bit of drizzle on Sunday, to see our beautiful county in all its glory. Noel, talk to me about the walk.
The walk itself is quite spectacular. I mean, I'm going back to a time, even my grandparents, my great-grandparents, they would have left their home maybe at midnight the night before fasting. They would have walked the pilgrim's path up to the top of the mountain and their mass would be said. It was part of a pilgrimage at Torres Ascelica. And that is a path that the walk will take. They register at 12 noon at the Sleeve League center, the Sleeve League Visitor Center. That is just round the corner from the Rusty Mackerel. Then at 1 o'clock, the 3 to 4 hour walk will commence. Very comfortable, very relaxed. And as you say, it's a very clearly defined path. It's not a very severe walk. It's a moderate walk. Yes, of course, when you're walking for 3 or 4 hours, you will know you've had a wee stroll. And you know, you drink in the atmosphere and that stunning scenery, the like of which you won't get anywhere in the world. There is nowhere quite as dramatic as Sleeve League. And there's a lovely community spirit and lots of chatter and a stop for a rest and bring a flask in your backpack and stop and have a cup of coffee. It's just a glorious outing, and you know you're doing it for a good cause.
Well, that's it. You know, the one thing about it, these things are very satisfying because you realize you become part of something greater than yourself. And I know that sounds right. It sounds a little bit twee, right? But in your way, you're gathering with other people and you're supporting the Kevin Bell Trust, but you're supporting other families. You're part of something greater.
Very much so.
You leave it feeling fulfilled.
Yeah, and there are people there on that walk on that day who are grieving. We forget that. You may not engage in that type of conversation, but unbeknownst to yourself, the support you are giving might just be so necessary on that day at that time. And the weather, I believe on Sunday, it's actually going to be very reasonable. And funny enough, an extremely warm, hot, sunny day isn't always the best.
That was the point I was trying to make. Yeah. You know, you get to soak up our environment in a different way. The pictures of a beautiful sunny beach with the mountain behind are gorgeous, but some of the beauty of our landscape really pops when there's a little bit of rain about. You can go on your own, because the one thing as well about these walks, everybody is your friend. And you don't have to speak to anyone, of course, but you become part of something immediately as soon as you turn up for registration. So if you want to do something that will benefit others, but actually, you know, benefit yourself, if you want to be a bit selfish about it, you will benefit from this.
You get to
the registration centre at 12 noon. The walk kicks off at 1. The weather looks like it's going to be okay. If you're looking for blistering sunshine, it's not going to be that day. But as I say, it's a different walk. It's moderate difficulty. It's a 3 or 4 hour walk. You'd want your boots, wouldn't you? And a rain jacket.
Absolutely.
No.
You know, and apart that, you know, any time you have a bit of rain or it's a little bit wet underfoot, a pair of decent walking boots is always, it's a good staple that you should have in your wardrobe if you enjoy walking. And as you say, Greg, it's just that wonderful camaraderie, walking, smelling those smells and listening to the sound of the sea and watching the wildlife. It's just a perfect outing for the Kevin Bell Trust. And people, you're only, as you say, you're getting a lot out of it yourself, and you really don't know how many others you're touching and supporting who might be carrying a greater load than yourself.
What is the fundraising mechanism? Is there a charge for registration?
Oh, absolutely. You register at 12 noon, yes. And I am sure that, as has happened in other years, people also make donations. Brilliant. And, you know, help in other ways, you know. And also, we have a responsibility to others who may not have heard of this trust to keep telling people that the Kevin Bell repatriation, it's there, and it's there to avail of its services. So it's a multifaceted kind of outing for, you know, information, awareness, support, registration, and of course any donations. Even if you're not doing the walk and you are listening, then please do feel free to make a donation.
And the lovely Hugh Boyle in our draw has texted in, "Hi Greg and Noel, just learned about the walk on Sunday. If anyone is going to the walk or returning from it and passing the Glengesh Pass, please stop at Mel's Coffee Cart and we'll give them a free tea or coffee and a treat for this fantastic cause." So if you needed one further iota of incentive, there it is.
Isn't that just, aren't people wonderful?
I love people and I love our county. I love you. Bye-bye, Noel.
I love you too. And I'll see you on Glengesh on Sunday for a cup of coffee, Greg.
Slánga fóill. Thank you very much indeed. Take care. That is the irrepressible Noel Cunningham. Have a great day. We're back tomorrow morning with the Friday panel. We're back with the last episode of That's Entertainment in its current guise. It's been rejigged a little bit for the summer. And so much more besides.